Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
The shooting of 16 Afghan villagers by a rogue U.S. sergeant, many of whom were women and children, hangs heavily over the NATO mission there today. You'll remember the missteps by members of the American military over the past few months. Video of American troops urinating on the corpses of Afghan soldiers. Last month's burning of multiple copies of the Quran on an American airbase set off a series of protests across the country. Well, most elected Afghan politicians have supported the U.S. and NATO presence in their country until now. What next? John Hockenberry is in London. He's been hosting the BBC World Service's World Update program. Good, isn't it, John? Let's talk about the Afghan MP, the Member of Parliament that you've been talking to.
Well, Dan, it's great being here in London, trying to fill your shoes. I suspect I won't be able to do that. But on your program, World Update, this morning, we explored just that sort of sea change that you referred to of politicians, opposition, and even supporters of Hamid Karzai really attempting to distance themselves from the NATO forces and the U.S. Military presence in Afghanistan. We spoke with Daoud Sultanzoy. He's a former member of parliament, an opposition politician, but his anger and outrage is fairly typical of the reaction in Afghanistan. And the minimum demand on the part of Afghan tribal elders and politicians that this soldier be tried in Afghanistan. And I asked Daoud what the sort of cultural difference might be if the Pentagon were to conclude that this soldier was acting out of some sort of mental illness or had some sort of breakdown. And here's how he responded.
If Pentagon wants to turn this into a laboratory frog and put its gloves and then dissect it piece by piece, it's their choice. But in this country, the perception is this, and let me tell you how they feel. They say, okay, a father of two children gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning and goes and wakes people up, two-year-old children, and shoots them and then sets them on fire. What kind of breakdown is this? If he's fit enough to be a soldier, he's fit enough to be punished.
And that's the point, isn't it, John, that they have very little tolerance now after the Quran burnings, after the other incidents. The anti-American feeling there is growing.
And it's very sophisticated. Daoud Sultanzoy really he didn't lecture me personally, but really spoke in a fairly sophisticated way about the PR, the sort of hearts and minds challenge. Listen to this.
I think orderly transition is a very rhetorical subject right now. I think look at it in a practical fashion. You guys have invented modern-day PR, but you are miserably failing in this country in that respect. And these kinds of situations make it even worse. And I think the long-term process has to be kept in mind. But in order to reach those goals, we need to do short-term repair work, and that is very important. And justice and bringing this perpetrator to justice is going to be a very important matter in order to at least quell the public inflamed and flared-up feelings right now.
And John, did Mr. Sultanzoy, did he talk about the Taliban? And, okay, they're getting, as he says, a PR boost from this, but the chance of those in government working with the Taliban, is that on the agenda?
Well, the cards that the Taliban appears to hold right now are very, very significant, and they have the momentum. If the U.S. and NATO can respond to this in a way that's appropriate, there's the chance that perhaps the decline in support that we've seen just in these few hours may return. But I think at the very least, there's a wide consensus among the people we talk to that at the very least, the acceleration of a U.S.-NATO withdrawal from Afghanistan seems to be in the cards. It may not necessarily change the date of 2014, but there's certainly some impetus to really make clear that that's what's going on here, a withdrawal.
John, thanks very much indeed, and hopefully we'll talk to you some more in the week ahead. Well, let's discuss this further with Michael Semple. He's a fellow at the Carr Center for Human Rights at the Kennedy School of Government. Also on the line, Afghan war veteran Nick Colgan. Nick, let me ask you first. You have a Bronze Star for serving your country overseas, admirably, honorably. So how disheartening is it for you and other soldiers like you, committed to the mission, to hear this kind of story?
It's very disheartening. And also, look, these actions, they're isolated. I fought for 15 months in Afghanistan, directly involved in heavy combat. Beginning at 22 years old and didn't do anything like this. I was in a similar situation, a remote fire base in Afghanistan, working with special ops. I would get shot at most days, shoot back, and then do it again the next day. I would be expected to provide medical aid to women and children in local villages. And I did. I've even had to treat enemy combatants, the same guys that shot me and killing soldiers around me. You had to be a professional, bottom line. I earned a Bronze Star for my my honorable actions in combat against an actual enemy. And then on top of that, in the past 3 weeks, I've mourned the loss of all three buddies. And to think that their legacy is going to be tarnished by an act like this is demoralizing.
The pressure is intense. What help do you get actually out in the field? What kind of psychological counseling do you have access to?
Look, I was out, similar fire base, similar situation, getting shot at day in, day out, shooting back. If you have signs and symptoms of PTSD, sometimes soldiers self-identify. Sometimes the men and women around him, his leadership, they should have identified the signs if he had them. I'm not presuming he did, but if he did, they should have identified that and sent him back to Bagram, the main base, to get help with combat stress. I've seen it happen, and I've seen it happen successfully, where individuals identify and they get the help they need. So it would have been a lot better if he would have identified if he had those symptoms.
And of course, we should be clear that we're still waiting for a lot of details about this, the confirmation of the deaths, but we don't know the name of the man, we don't know what happened, and whether there was anybody else with him, although the stories say that he was on his own. But in a sense, those facts don't matter anymore, do they, Michael Semple? The Afghan people believe this is an attack on Afghanistan, and they probably say on Islam.
They absolutely do, and this is going to further undermine the relationship and cooperation between Afghan people, Afghan government, and the United States and the country.
So is there anything now that can be done? The withdrawal date is there, 2014. Is that something that should be looked at now, do you believe?
The trouble is how does the U.S. leave some kind of positive legacy in Afghanistan? And the best way to do that is by leaving a stable government in the country. And that is not going to be achieved by withdrawing earlier. That is going to be achieved by working for some kind of political agreement before the U.S. leaves.
There's talk about some kind of Taliban light who can be brought into a government that would share power. That also is an idea that becomes less likely with this kind of incident.
Well, there still are, there's an ongoing political process, engagement with the Taliban. There are people inside the Taliban movement who do not want to be involved in a violent power struggle after the U.S. Leaves. There still is some hope for that, but the U.S. is really going to have to pursue that with full vigor. At the moment, people have been hanging back, saying, oh, it's an election year, we can't do it now, it's now or never.
Michael, is there a different story in different parts of Afghanistan? I was talking to somebody just back from serving with the Royal Air Force in Helmand province who was pretty upbeat about the effectiveness of the Afghan army there, about the opportunity that NATO might have to pull out pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Afghanistan is it's more than one country. If you go to the north of the country, it is broadly anti-Taliban. It's not just a question of having beaten the Taliban back. The Taliban just do not have any serious presence there. If you go to some parts of the south, like Helmand, over the past couple of years, the Taliban have significantly reduced in influence. However, if you look around Kandahar, you look over in the east of the country, the Taliban are still fighting very hard.
The idea of negotiations, then, and this is something that you tried to promote when you were there as the Deputy EU Special Representative to the European Union, did you meet anybody who might be part of a power-sharing government and who would allow the withdrawal to take place more quickly?
Certainly, I have met such people, and in fact, they exist. They are now engaging between the Taliban and the U.S. administration. They want to see a power-sharing administration because they're fearful that if the U.S. and its allies pull out in 2014 without some kind of agreement, there will indeed be a violent power struggle, which means another 10 years of civil war in the country.
And can they say that in public now after incidents like the one that we're talking about?
Well, This makes it, of course, difficult for them to operate. But in a sense, it strengthens their rationale, because what they're trying to do is to bring an end to the war. I'm not sure whether there's a realistic prospect of accelerating the withdrawal, in the sense that it's only a fairly short timetable already. But it is possible, if things move along politically, to start at least moving to ceasefire. I mean, there's no reason why the U.S. Army has to be involved in killing Afghans for the next 2 years before completing the withdrawal, if the Taliban really play ball by themselves moving over to a ceasefire. So, of course, there are other ways of handling this conflict over the next couple of years.
Well, thanks very much indeed, Michael Semple. Let's just finish with you, Nick Colgan. You served, you got the bronze, you won a Bronze Star. You have plenty of friends who are still serving out there. What will they be saying to each other today?
Honestly, they're probably going to band together and just in solidarity and realize that this moment shouldn't define them, and hopefully they use this energy pushing forward. There's a lot of good incidents that come out. Like, while I was overseas, I helped save 42 Afghan local nationals from a flooding river. There's guys doing that type of stuff every week, every month, and you're not hearing about these types of incidents every week and every month. So in no way should it define the war, and I think a lot of people are going to band together and think back to why they're serving overseas, and that's the fight for their country that they're proud of, that can be proud of them.
Nick, thanks very much indeed. That's Nick Colgan, an Afghan war veteran and Bronze Star winner. You're listening to The Takeaway. This is Dan Damon and Celeste Headley. You can comment on that if you want to. Post a comment at thetakeaway.org.